Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. Reassurance is knowing our pensions will be supporting you in the years ahead. Speak to a financial broker about a Zurich pension today.
Drive Time with Katie Hannan and Cullum O'Mungoyne on RTE Radio 1.
Now, lots happening this week for us to unpack with our Friday catch-up. There has been Trump's turbulent tactics towards Venezuela, more transport turmoil on the M50 and the Lewis Green Line, and a flu frenzy on its way just in time for Christmas. Joining us now to discuss all of this is Dr. Graham Finlay, Assistant Professor in the School of Politics and International Relations at University College Dublin, and Aoife Kearney, Assistant Editor of the Weekend Magazine at the Irish Independent. You're both very welcome. Let's start with US President Donald Trump, as we so often have to, who says he will soon begin strikes to interdict narcotics shipments making their way from interrupt narcotics shipments making their way from Venezuela to the US via land routes. Press Secretary Caroline Leavitt fielded several questions last night on the US seizure of the tanker. Let's take a listen.
With respect to the oil and what happened yesterday, the Department of Justice requested and was approved for a warrant to seize a vessel because it's a sanctioned shadow vessel known for carrying black market sanctioned oil to the IRGC, which you know is a sanctioned entity. So the president is committed to stopping the illegal flow of drugs into our country. He's also fully committed to effectuating this administration's sanction policy. And that's what you saw and the world saw take place yesterday.
Now, the Venezuelan leader Nicolas Maduro says escalating pressure from the US is coming down to one thing. Washington wants to grab their vast oil reserves. Graham, your thoughts on this?
That's probably true. I think we'll see a lot more conflict in the region. I mean, the US has much, much greater naval power than Venezuela. And yet, when he starts talking about land attacks in Venezuela, you know, that is really, really problematic. I mean, the chance of a full-scale war, I think, is overblown, but just about anything can happen. It's very, very destabilizing. I mean, on one hand, they've shown that they can seize a ship at sea, a much larger ship than these drug ships they're targeting with missiles. But they, you know, also under the color of any kind of war on drugs or international law, can basically do what they want.
So theater, or what was it all about?
Mostly theater, like almost all of this stuff
is
theater, right?
And
I mean, I'm sure he likes getting stuff like a big tanker full of oil, which was bound for China. Again, maybe the response of America's great power rivals is going to be most interesting. China hasn't really felt like putting its neck out to support Venezuela. Venezuela has very few friends. So, and Russia doesn't need oil from Venezuela. So, I mean, I think one of the interesting questions will be what China does in response.
If it's another case of flooding the zone. I mean, he's had his go at Europe. We'll talk about that in a while. He's out every day with something else to say, whether it's the war in Ukraine. This has kind of flown under the radar on this side of the Atlantic without making as big a splash as it might have at other times.
Massively so. And I think just back theater, I think, is a really good operative word, because we know that they've seized oil tankers, oil before, but that kind of video coming across our social media is so unusual, and the way they're kind of doling that out, I know the Attorney General was kind of posting it and stuff, that I think is really unusual, and that's not something I've personally seen before anyway.
Yeah, it was like something out of a Tom Cruise movie.
Absolutely.
Basically, the way it was presented and shared.
Wouldn't be the first time that America got itself in bother with an episode in a gulf off a country with a left-wing leadership, Graham,
true.
The Gulf of Tonkin incident?
Well, I think if Venezuela was invaded by the American army, it'd be like Vietnam. I mean, you know, while it is, and we don't want to carry too much water for the Venezuelan regime because it is an authoritarian state which represses its people quite extensively. But, you know, I don't think it's so unpopular that he could send in a couple battalions and topple the government. So but that's not what he's going to do. I mean, he's just going to keep taking shots and seizing stuff when he feels like it. And we've seen these incursions and these sanctions and even, you know, direct military presence in a lot of Latin American countries over the years, and interventions. And because the governments down in South America are not so unified, he seems to be getting away with it. He's bullying Colombia. You know, anytime a left-wing president is elected, they get the sort of full treatment from the president. So it's, I mean, in a way it's business as usual, but in a way it's also very, very destabilizing and worrisome. That there was even a moment where U.S. Marines sort of invaded Mexico by mistake. They thought it was U.S. territory, but they ended up going quite a distance into Mexico and setting up little signs. And poor President Sheinbaum of Mexico had to sort of navigate this kind of activity on the northern border.
And there's also the marked difference, we were talking about this earlier and this evening's show, with the approach to that sanctioned oil and that tanker to blind eye being turned to the massive Russian shadow fleet that's circumventing their sanctions.
Yeah, and that's actually a classic Trump. I really enjoyed that piece you had with Stephanie Baker because it really got to a question which a lot of us have, which is what is going on in the Russian economy? And you know, again, to Trump's credit, when he decides to do something, he avails of all the sanctions, whereas clearly Biden was not really rigorously enforcing the sanctions. Now, next week, he may be friends with Putin again and then, you know, decline to enforce the sanctions. But that was a remarkable sort of moment that, yeah, things have actually tightened up on those Russian oil interests.
Aoife, Europe is just a big woke project that's eating itself alive through its migration policy, and people would be better off going their own way is what Donald Trump's policy prescription to Europe was, and it frightened the life out of European leaders.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, it's so interesting for someone like Trump, who has so many vested interests in, you know, we hear Europe, but we see Ireland really as, you know, from our leaders. But the comment, I think, is talk about below the belt in terms of all of the things that, when you look at America's relationship with immigration, specifically to Ireland, we have such a rich history and culture of that. So I think, I don't really know what his motive for that kind of comment was. And he's been coming for Europe for a while, I suppose, and it's another kind of rung along that kind of fight, I suppose.
In terms of that word we got this week about the changes to the visa rules, that if you want to apply for the ESTA now, mm-hmm. you're going to have to supply all your social media handles for 5 years. I'm thinking about like J1 students, and I know there are fewer of them now looking towards America for their J1, mm-hmm. but that could put off a lot of people, couldn't it?
I think it already has, and that will continue, I think. And it's not J1s, but also people maybe my age and a little bit younger looking to go to the States for work, and on those postgrad visas as well. I think it's not worth the hassle. It's just not worth the headache. And there are other now more attractive places on the kind of heading that direction, whether it be Canada or even people going to Australia and stuff. They're seeing that as a much more viable option than the States, because the opportunities for Irish people to go and maybe put down roots aren't there anymore. And I think we're seeing a lot of that, and it's something we kind of come up against a lot when it comes to reporting on, when you kind of move into the conversation around ICE and people, Irish people who are undocumented in the States. People are terrified, and people, you know, people have family members who are living over there documented, and it's really difficult to see. So I think it's become a totally unattractive place for young people to see as a viable option, whether that be for a 3 month stint in San Francisco or something more longer term.
Yeah, you're shaking, you're nodding your head there, Graham, with the students you talk to as well.
That's true. I mean, I've talked to my students in California, and they describe their neighborhoods as being terrorized by ICE, and, you know, people who never demonstrated before going on demonstrations, because it really is the case that people are just jumping out of cars and grabbing everybody they can. And having lived in California at various stretches,
anybody Hispanic looking,
yeah, no, probably not me, right? You know, but having lived in California as a Canadian, I should say, for various stretches of time, you know, all the women who used to sell me tamales in the park in Pasadena were rounded up quite early on in this process, right? And I didn't go to the U.S. this summer, and we usually do. My wife and children are Canadian. And because, you know, there's a non-zero chance that I wouldn't get in, right? And if I flew into an airport, you know, I'd be detained, because there's an incentive to detain people. There's a guy who drifted into Maine waters out of Quebec waters, and instead of just towing him back to Quebec waters, they detained him for a long period, 8 or 9 hours in his wet clothes, before deporting him, because that's incentivized by the structure.
Because it's quotas and yeah. they need to hit them. Indeed, yeah.
What did you make, Graham, of that of the comments towards Europe? I mean, the J.D. Vance was very critical of the Germans at the Munich Security Conference and kind of saying, well, why are you putting this cordon sanitaire around the AfD, the alternative for Germany, which would be, let's say, more favourable in its views to Russia than the rest of the German political establishment. And there seems to be a kind of an effort to enable some of those parties within Europe, criticism of the EU and a more favourable deal on Ukraine towards Russia. I mean, it must be causing massive concern, more so than European leaders are openly articulating.
Yeah, I'd say so. And I mean, that was the most disturbing thing, that this ethno-nationalist approach and supporting ethno-nationalist parties, many of whom, as you say, were supported by Russia, not all of them, but many of whom have had very favorable terms of loans and things like that from Russia. And that is going to be central to the U.S. foreign policy, is just tells you how far we've fallen in terms of relationships between the European countries and the United States. I don't know how this is going to play out. And the direct promoting of parties like the AfD, which are beyond the pale still, although it's weakening in Germany, whether there'll be a backlash among non-AfD supporters, it remains to be seen.
Okay, let's move on because the other big story this week is
not move at all
for a lot of people out there. Not people out there. I'm so conscious when you talk about anything to do with traffic that some of the people listening to you are going to be stuck right in the middle of it. So we do feel your pain out there. But we had 2 days of that power outage on the Green Lewis line, and more talk about how impossible now the traffic congestion on the M50 has been. Aoife, I mean, what we're hearing now from Transport Infrastructure Ireland, they're just basically saying, yeah, the M50 is at capacity. Traffic levels now are beyond Celtic Tiger numbers. Mm-hmm. No surprise to anyone out there.
It's a really unusual response from them. They seem to be like washing their hands of it and refusing to take any part in what might be a discussion about a possible solution for this. I read earlier in the week that kind of orbital scheme seems really interesting. And I think no more than Metrolink and all those big expensive infrastructure projects, it would be massive disruption, but probably, I know that there are many kind of carbon offset issues with that as well, but it seems like a feasible recourse for what we're kind of dealing with on the M50 currently. I'm very privileged that I don't have to go on to the M50 to get to work, but I'm travelling 6 kilometres every day and I spend an hour 45 getting home from Talbot Street last week. It's just rage inducing, the traffic that people are sitting in. I don't know how, and you can sense people are getting really angry. Like, I would get the Green Line to work every day, or maybe a bus if the times weren't right, but me and my housemates decided to drive in because we knew we'd come out of work at 6 o'clock in the dark and it would be raining and we'd want to get a taxi and that would be too expensive because it would be sitting in traffic for that amount of time. And you know, first of all, your leg is cramping up because I made the bad decision to have a manual car sitting in rush hour Dublin traffic. Merrion Square is a car park. You can't make any head nor tail. People are so angry. People get really frustrated, which is so, I'm frustrated. Everyone is.
Costs 80 quid to fill a 1 litre engine car.
Yeah. I don't really know what the answer is, but things were bad anyway. It is an infrastructure problem at the end of the day. But when something like the Lewis goes wrong, everything just is thrown up in a heap.
And in case anybody thinks this is a Dublin-only issue, Graham, this affects surrounding counties. If the M50 is clogged up, you're talking about people who, it's adding an hour to the commute of people who are coming from as far away as Westmeath, Cavan, Longford, Kilkenny, Wexford, Leash, Offaly. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I have students commuting every, I'm looking for records, yeah. But like Donegal by plane has been told, maybe it's apocryphal, right? But certainly from Wexford, from Dundalk, you know, people are commuting huge distances to UCD. And it's a combination of our commitment to sprawl as a country, right, and the inability of the systems to cope. And that's particularly hard on people in the city. And I was struck by your coverage of this, that some of the people who had the biggest problems were trying to get to Island Bridge from Sandyford, right? Yeah. And so they weren't even going to Meath or Kildare or whatever. So that is a symptom of lack of capacity and just things not working. I mean,
Do it better?
Yes, definitely. I mean, Toronto's a huge sprawling city, but, you know, obviously everything could be better. But, you know, if you've got a subway, I was just in Lisbon, which is a much poorer country, and everything is integrated in a fantastic way. You can get around the city very, very, very quickly in beautiful metro stations. Now, again, it helps if you have an underground, but instead of building more capacity, they just paused almost all of the routes out to those places, you know, Dart Finglas, Dart West, and stuff like that. So, you know, what's really highlighted about this is if something bad happens, and I'm not an engineer, so I don't know how fixable that fault was, the system, the buses just aren't there to cope. And those self-same buses aren't even there for people on a regular basis. You know, I've lived in Inchicore for a long time. The buses bring people from the suburbs and don't stop in Inchicore under bus connects, right? And this is a big issue for disabled people, older people. And then the other thing is the social toll of those people stuck in traffic on the M50. I remember back in the Celtic Tiger, because I've been here a long time, you know, that we were really worried about the effects on society of people having to get up at leave their house at 7 o'clock in the morning and getting back at 7 o'clock at night and never seeing their children.
Aoife, for people on public transport, the other concern is the flu and getting it on the way home from work.
And Una getting Kelly. Up very up close and personal with people on those
indeed,
buses.
Yeah. We're fighting for the privilege to be packed in like sardines on the Lewis every morning. Who among us hasn't had that nasty flu that's been going on? I'm on my second antibiotic of the season so far, which I think I'm probably at my limit now. But we're not at our peak yet, which is quite a scary thought when you talk about people who are presenting in hospital for flu symptoms.
Would you wear a mask?
That's a good question. I don't know. If it was an enforceable thing, absolutely. We all have to, you know, with COVID, we all proved that was something.
We're not going back there anytime yet.
If it meant that we would avoid a flu, I've been through a nasty one this year, I probably would. If I could go back 6 weeks prior and say if I could wear a mask, I'd skip the flu, I would have to, yeah.
That's a good one. Yeah, what about you, Graham?
Well, I'm scared, so I'm now going to get the flu shot. It's worked, right? and certainly I'd wear a mask if I had the flu, you know.
Empty seats in the lecture halls?
Yeah. I haven't seen like it show up as a sort of mass absenteeism in my classes. I've had a few students who've had the flu and they've said it's pretty bad, but it hasn't been, you know, at the level where it seems different from other years. But I'm definitely going to go get a flu shot. And I should say they're probably free for a lot of people. I know they're not free for everybody and that can put people off. And again, I was listening when people were advocating free flu shots for everybody. But if age, there are a lot of conditions, there are a lot of things about you which could get you a free flu shot. So you should really look into it if you're thinking about it.
Okay. All right, Graham, thanks very much for that. That's Dr. Graham Finlay, Assistant Professor in the School of Politics and International Relations at UCD, and Aoife Kearney, Assistant Editor of the Weekend magazine at the Irish Independent. Thanks very much for that.